after 1948. But the Negro Leagues died in 1948. This could be a very short presentation. The last Negro League World Series was contested between the Homestead Grays and the Birmingham Black Barons, and the statistics in Seam Heads, Retro Sheet, and pretty much every other source I looked at only went through 1948. I remember getting into a discussion once with Leighton Revel, who's a pretty good researcher, about Billy Harrell. I said, Billy Harrell never played in the Negro Leagues. He said, yes, he did. He played in 1951 in Birmingham. I couldn't find anything. Our book, Bittersweet Goodbye, was about the 48 Homestead Grays and the Birmingham Black Barons. The ALNL baseball had been integrated, beginning with Jackie Robinson on April 15, 47. Was there life in the Negro Leagues after 48, and why should we care? Why do we pose the question? Well, a couple of things I looked at. Willie Mays played with the Birmingham Black Barons in 1948 at the age of 17. He next appears, per Baseball Reference, with Trenton in 1950. What happened to Mays? Where was he? Ernie Banks never played a day in the minors. Well, where was he prior to his debut with the Cubs in September of 53? And Hank Aaron began his career in the minor leagues with Eau Claire, Wisconsin in 1952. They even have a plaque there saying he played his first professional game there. Did he? And what happened to the hundreds of men who played on the 12 Negro League teams in 1948? Let's look at this thing. The Negro Leagues didn't die. They just faded away, and it took a while for them to fade away. In 1948, we had two leagues, the Negro American League, the Negro National League team, each had six teams. Most of these teams were located in northern urban centers. Half of the teams were in cities with ALNL major league teams. Here was the lineup. We look at these teams. Homestead Grays. Homestead is a small community outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Grays played in Pittsburgh for home games on Saturdays. On Sundays, they played in Washington, D.C., and during the week, they played everywhere else. The Baltimore Eli Giants. Baltimore wasn't a major league team then, but Baltimore was a big suburb, big urban area. Same with the Newark Eagles. The Philadelphia Stars, the two New York teams. There were only two Southern teams, really, the Birmingham Black Barons and the Memphis Red Sox. Before 1949, two teams dropped out of the Negro League, Negro National League. The Homestead Grays, they had been owned by Cumberland Posey. He had died in March of 1946. He was crucial to their success because he knew publicity, he knew newspapers, and he got his team featured in the Pittsburgh Courier. Josh Gibson, the big home run hitter, he had died in January of 1947. Luke Easter, the slugger who replaced Gibson in 47 and 48, he was en route to the Cleveland Indians. There was not much money, and the team chose to barnstorm and joined the Negro American Association. Then there were the New York Black Yankees. The New York Black Yankees were about as bad as the New York White Yankees were good. They were clearly the worst Negro League franchise. They had relocated to Rochester, New York in 48. They played in Rochester. They also played in Syracuse. They also played in New York. And after 1948, they became a barnstorming team who played anywhere but New York. Two teams relocated. The Newark Eagles. Now, this was a great team. They had started out as the Brooklyn Eagles in 1935, played at Ebbets Field. The next bunch of years, they played in Newark. They won the championship in 1946. Abe and Effa Manley, famous. Effa Manley, the only woman in the Hall of Fame. They decided to sell out. The team moved to Houston. But the players were gone. Their stars were gone. Monty Irvin was their best player. Of course, along with Larry Doby, Irvin was into the minor leagues in 1949. The Buckeyes, the Cleveland Buckeyes, they had won the Negro League championship in 47. Their star was Stan Jethro. He was gone. He was in the Dodger organization. He would be the 1950 New York National League Rookie of the Year. And Al Smith, he was signed by Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. The team moved to Louisville in 1949. Or did they? Well, here's the 1949 lineup, much more of a Southern focus. There was now one league, one Negro American League, Eastern Division, Western Division. The Eastern Division had some old Negro National League teams and included the Louisville Buckeyes and the Indianapolis Clowns. The Western Division was the Monarchs, about the strongest Negro League franchise there was. The Chicago American Giants, Birmingham, Memphis, and Houston. Southern teams, so we now have a more of a Southern focus, less of a city focus, less of a major league location focus. So where did the black players go in 1949? We just heard from Don about eight players that were signed by the Cubs organization. Well, a handful went to the ALNL majors. Minnie Minoso, Don Newcomb, Monty Irvin, and Luke Easter went to the majors in 1949. Hank Thompson returned to the majors in 49 along with Irvin with the Giants. He had been with the St. Louis Browns for a month in 1947. Artie Wilson, I believe he was mentioned as the last 400 hitter in a presentation the other day with Birmingham. He led a group of six black players in the Pacific Coast League. Sam Jethro was one of a small group in the International League. The American Association had about three black players. With few exceptions, and you heard about them just previously, the lower minor league remained segregated in 1949. Most players from the Negro Leagues of 1948 were still in the Negro American League in 1949. And Marion Jackson in the Atlanta Daily World said, Negro League eyes successful baseball season. A similar article, I might say, would appear before every Negro League season going on for several years. But then again, I'm a Mets fan, and we have the same article every year in the New York papers. Now, the Kansas City Monarchs. Now, this is a great team. The pitching staff, you heard about it. Hilton Smith, Satchel Paige, Connie Johnson. Connie Johnson was leading the staff in 1949. Elston Howard, you heard of him. He didn't play as much as catcher because they had a couple of other catchers, so he played in the outfield quite a bit. The Keystone combination, Kurt Roberts, who later broke the color line with the Pirates, was at second base, and Gene Baker, who ultimately wound up the second black player with the Cubbies, he was at shortstop. Willard Brown, who had been with the St. Louis Browns in 1947, he returned for several seasons with the Monarchs. Bob Thurman was acquired by the Homestead Grays. He played in the outfield. He later played in the majors. And Frank Barnes would later advance with the Cardinals. The first baseman was Buck O'Neill, who was also the manager. And they would remain, the Monarchs, a viable franchise through 1962 and a remarkable 22 Kansas City Monarchs played in the AL-NL majors at one time or another, starting with Jackie Robinson and going through to Ike Brown. The Birmingham Black Barons, well, they had lost Artie Wilson to Oakland. Piper Davis was their player manager, hit over 400 in 1949. Willie Mays was a high school junior. He couldn't leave high school to go on the road with the team early in the year. He played at home. In the home opener, Mays threw out Jesse Douglas at home plate. Mays was noted for his arm, his gun from center field from early on. And pitcher Bill Greason, who later played with the St. Louis Cardinals, the last time I looked, is now baseball's second oldest living player, black or white. Well, Willie Mays' career in Birmingham was pretty well documented in the Birmingham News. From the May 11th edition, he had his first home run on May 10th. And then in the May 22nd issue, they were lauding how great a thrower he was from center field. Well, the Baltimore Elite Giants won the first half of the season in the Eastern Division, leading, and Louisville Cleveland was 12-38. That was about as good as they got. Who led Baltimore? A couple of names you guys might remember. Joe Black was on the pitching staff. He was in his seventh season with them. He remained in Baltimore through 1950, joined the Dodger organization, that would be Montreal, in 1951. He went 15-4 with the Dodgers in Brooklyn, and 52-1 the Rookie of the Year. He was something like the third or fourth consecutive black Rookie of the Year winner in the National League. He was followed, by the way, as Rookie of the Year by Junior Gilliam. He was only 20 years, and I will still call him Junior Gilliam. But he was in his fourth season with Baltimore, and he proceeded to the majors as well. I have to talk a little bit about the New York Cubans. They were owned by Alex Pompez. They played their home games at the Polo Grounds, and they had the great $100,000 infield. Now, $100,000 now will get you one day out of an infielder, but then we had Lorenzo Cabrera at first, Ray Dandridge at second, Armando Ibanez at short, and Howard Easterling at third. None of these infielders went to the AL-NL major leagues, but five men who played with the 49 Cubans did. Dandridge went to AAA with Minneapolis and did very well there. Now, the scouts were out in force when the Cubans played their first home games at the Polo Grounds on May 29th. That's a little late for a home opener, but they had been rained out twice. They won that home first game against Birmingham behind Pat Cantlebury's 10 strikeouts. He made it to the majors for six games with Cincinnati in 56. But the Polo Grounds was set up. The clubhouse was in center field. And if you didn't know about this, you could look out from the center field clubhouse with binoculars onto the field and see all sorts of things. Well, the Giants scouts saw something out in center field. You can see in the Daily News of New York on May 29th, they said the spies were going to be out. Then we see the article from the early edition of the Daily News the next day that Willie Mays hit an inside-the-park home run in the first game loss. It does not say if Willie's hat went off between second and third or not. Well, the Philadelphia Stars. They had a great team in 1934, but overall they were not too good. But they had Bus Clarkson, who made it to the majors, Bill Cash, and Bob Griffith. I'm going to move quickly through these slides because I want to get to the other player, other big players. Kansas City won in the first half of the 1949 season in the West, and Chicago, and we have some stats here that we have with Piper Davis leading the league in batting. The East-West game was played in Chicago. Again, they had a pretty good crowd of 31,097. Only two pitchers from that game made it to the majors, Scantlebury and Greason. The East-West games would continue through 1962. The Chicago American Giants won in the West in the second division with a late rush. There should have been a playoff with Kansas City. There was not. Chicago goes to the Negro League World Series, so there was another Negro League World Series. And that was between the Chicago American Giants and the Baltimore Elite Giants, and Baltimore won it in four games. The first two games were played at Bugle Field. They couldn't play another game there because Bugle Field was scheduled for demolition. Get out. So they played in Norfolk, they played in Chicago, and there are no box scores for these games. 1949, the number of box scores we have is maybe 25% of all games. These are the 1949 Negro League, Negro American League players. 25 of them made it to the ALNL majors. That is not a bad percentage of the total players in the league. And, of course, Mays and Howard and Connie Johnson topped that list. 1950, some departures and some arrivals. Well, the New York Cubans added Sandy Amoros, who homered at the Polo Grounds, as a Negro Leaguer and a Major Leaguer. How about that? Ernie Banks graduated high school in Dallas, and he made it to the Monarchs. He roomed with Elston Howard until Elston Howard was signed by the Yankee organization along with Frank Barnes that year. So we had a lot of signings in 1950. 1950 was really the last year of the big Negro American League. Mays was signed in 1950, a month after he graduated high school. He went to Trenton. But he came back to Birmingham on September 24th, he played his last Negro American League games. They had Willie Mays Day. They knew he was going to the majors, no secret. Elston Howard was ready to move on. He had a home run binge right before he left. On July 18th, he went to the Yankee organization, and for whatever reason, it took all the way to 1955 for him to make it to the Yankees. Ernie Banks, 1950, he started on June 4th in a doubleheader, was 1-for-4 and 2-for-3. The How News Bureau says he batted 255 in 53 games for them. Other players moved on. But we want to talk about a guy who played, I'm going to speak a bit about Sam Hairston. Played with the Indianapolis Clowns, made it to the White Sox, 2-for-5, a cup of coffee in 52. But what a family. He had a couple of sons who played in the majors. His grandson played in the majors. Sam Hairston himself was with the Cub organization for over 40 years. July 24th, 1950, Satchel Paige back in the Negro Leagues after his stint with the Indians. And then the Eagles, they were homeless. They moved to Houston, then they moved to New Orleans, and they disappeared from the league. So did the Buckeyes. They had a couple of players. Sam Jones played for them, the guy who wound up with the Giants. 51, two teams dropped out, and there were only eight teams. Marshall Bridges played that year, later played with the Yankees. Satchel Paige was back in the Negro Leagues. And Willard Brown, he wound up in Ottawa Senators of the Border League batting 352 in a month in 1950. He was the only black player in that league. And there was further contraction in 1952, and then we kind of talk about Henry Aaron in the last 5 minutes or so that we got. He joined the Indianapolis Clowns in 1952. He had 13 chances at shortstop in one game without an error. He participated in seven double plays in one game. And in May 18th of 52, he had his first two home runs and he hit them at Baltimore's Memorial Stadium. Well, he did again hit a home run at Baltimore's Memorial Stadium. It was 24 years later when he was with the Milwaukee Brewers. On June 10th of 52, he had his last game with the Clowns before joining the Braves organization, where he went to Eau Claire. These are his first two home runs in Baltimore, and this is the box score of that game. We have precious few box scores, but this is one of them. He leads the league in early June. Before leaving for the Monarchs, he was batting 427 with five homers and 26 RBIs. And this article was from the Alabama Tribune, a black weekly paper in Alabama. Indianapolis wins the first half of 1952. And in the postseason, there was a barnstorming between Birmingham and Indianapolis. They played as many as 18 games. The MVP of the series was Hank Aaron. He returned to play with the Clowns after his time with Eau Claire. And this is on September 18th, he homered, doubled, and had three singles in a win for them. He had batted, by the way, 346 at Eau Claire. And this is from October 7th of 1952. And they started to call him in the Knoxville News Sentinel. They called him Hammerin' Hank Aaron. I don't know if that was the first time, but the first of many. And the Knoxville News Sentinel, 10-9-52, had Hank Aaron's last Negro League game. And in that game, he doubled and tripled. He also was supposed to go to Milwaukee in the American Association in 1953. That didn't work out because the Braves went to Milwaukee in 53. So he broke the color line in the South Atlantic League along with Felix Mantilla. And Jacksonville went 93-44 for Ben Garrity, who Hank Aaron later said was the best manager he ever had. Ernie Banks returned to the Monarchs in 53 and graduated to the Cubs. He played his last game with the Monarchs on September 13th, debuted with the Cubs 4 days later. In his last game, played at Forbes Field, by the way, Banks singled, stole second base, and scored the winning run. In his next swing at Chicago, he hit one over the fence, but that was in batting practice. Are we out of time here? We're right on zero. I'll take any questions. You can see we've just begun the 1949 project. Retro Sheet is about to do 450 games. We have box scores for 25% of them. So we'll finish it. It'll get posted within 6 months or so. Thank you.